Sean Devaney of Sporting News wrote an article yesterday that, you know, kind of touched on something I guess I'd sort of skirted around, or I may have mentioned, but, you know, we heard Masai Ujiri at the end of the season, the end of the Raptor season, talk about how he wanted culture change, you know, and on the court that was going to manifest itself in more three-point shooting or more proficient three-point shooting, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. And I kind of said at the time that the only way you were going to enact culture change is to change, I think, or one of the only ways you do it is to change the cast. Damari Carroll and Corey Joseph, both are gone. Patrick Patterson is gone. He's probably the one guy that of those three that I would have brought back. But you're still basically going to have Lowry, Valanciunas, DeRozan, Ibaka, and then right now, I guess Norman Powell. And to me, if you want to really change the culture around this team, you remove Jonas Valanciunas from it. You remove the big guy. The guy who is okay on those nights when you need to beat Detroit or maybe Washington or maybe New Jersey, but isn't all that good or that useful when you need to beat Cleveland or you need to beat Golden State or you need to beat San Antonio. Sean Devaney is the writer at the Sporting News who authored that piece, and he joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Sean, thanks so much for joining us. It was a terrific piece, and the one thing that surprised me a little bit is, and I admit I don't, you know, I'm not, I don't spend as much time in basketball circles as you do, but I had no idea. I mean, I look at Jonas Valanciunas, and yeah, I see a big guy. He's, you know, could sometimes be plotting. But I didn't realize that there was such a kind of a question mark hanging over him about his fitness and just kind of about his ability to adapt to the new NBA world mentally as well as physically. That surprised me a bit.
Yeah, you know, I think that's one of the things that that when you talk to folks around the league, that sort of stood out to me is that you know, when you look at his third year in the NBA, he averaged about 12 points and about 9 rebounds. You know, decent production in terms of pick and roll. He's very good offensively, running the pick and roll. You know, takes up space defensively. You know, does sort of traditional big guy things. But here we are, you know, 3 years later, and he's about 12 points and 9 rebounds, and you know that's one of the things that that I think a lot of teams get stuck on when they look at him as a potential trade candidate is you know, this is a guy who sort of maxed out at age 22, and we haven't seen a whole lot of development since then. As the Raptors tried to move him in the last month or so, that's certainly what they found.
What is Jonas Valanciunas? Sean, when you look at him, what is he and how does he fit? Or do you think he fits in the modern NBA?
Well, right. I think modern, and by modern, really, you're talking about the last 5 years. You know, I mean, I think he came to the league, you know, 10 or 12 years too late. You know, if this was the mid-2000s, he'd have a much better place, you know, where big men weren't supposed to stretch the floor, where you weren't supposed to be a guy who could play out on the perimeter and guard the perimeter because other centers were going to be out there. You know, he's very traditional, back to the basket big man, and you know, when you watch them, when they feed him, you know, when they get him the ball, he can do good things with it. But the thing is that's just not where the game is right now, especially where you have a team that is so dominated by the two guards. You just don't have them giving the ball up enough. But you look around the league, and there's a lot of guys like that. There's a lot of guys. You know, teams still want to draft 7-footers. They still want to sign 7-footers in July, but when January comes around, the coach doesn't want to play the 7-footer anymore,
right?
Because they don't fit in today's game, and that's sort of where Valanciunas is right now. He would have been an ideal big guy 10 to 12 years ago.
No, you know, it's interesting you say that, because And I want to say it was a couple of years ago, we had a conversation with Dwayne Casey, and the question came up about why he was so reluctant to have Jonas out on the court late in games. And that's kind of always been a running dialogue in this city when it comes to Jonas. And essentially, Dwayne kind of got exasperated. And basically what he said is, look, the way the game is officiated now, quite frankly, Jonas is almost a foul magnet late in games.
Mm-hmm.
Because the emphasis, and this was a couple of years ago, the emphasis was going more and more on quickness, on the outside game. And, you know, when you've got a 7-foot guy who's kind of standing around the middle, the official's eyes are attracted to him. It's pretty hard not to. And that was yeah. Dwayne's point is, you know, you had to be cognizant of that. And that, as a head coach, that ties your hands, because essentially that's one of your guys you can't use. And no coach wants to be in that position.
Right, especially late in the game. I mean, you look at, say, the Warriors, and they'll start Zaza Pachulia at center, but you'll not see him in the game, you know, in the fourth quarter, or certainly not after the first couple minutes of the fourth quarter, because of what you're saying. And you look at the kind of defense that they play, where they have a lot of long-limbed perimeter defenders designed to keep you from getting into the paint because of their length, not because of their size. And you're right, and Dwayne's right, and that's the way that the game is officiated, that if you have a big guy just sort of standing in the lane with his arms up, and LeBron is coming at him and you know, trying to make a layup and there's contact there, who's going to get the call? We all know the answer to that. It's not Jonas. So, that's sort of the problem around the league with big guys that have been getting pretty good contracts, but like I say, when you get into the meat of the season, certainly when you get into the playoffs, teams find they can't really use them quite as much.
Now the Raptors are going to have a news conference today to formally introduce CJ Miles, who they received in a sign and trade deal with the Indiana Pacers. What is CJ Miles and how is he going to fit in, do you think, to the Raptors?
Yeah, you know, CJ Miles is like every team's seventh best player. You know, I mean, he can be a starter on some teams. He can be a sixth man on some other teams. He can fill in at the two. He can fill in at the three. He can shoot. He plays pretty good defense. You know, he's not great at anything, but he's always going to find what his best role is to help a team out. So, you know, I think that was a pretty good acquisition for them, especially with the help that they need on the wing. You know, like I say, he can kind of take whatever void you have and fill it in, and he does so at a pretty good price. So I thought that was a pretty good move for them, and I think that like I said, he's not going to knock your socks off, but he's going to do all the little things that that the team's going to need over the course of 82 games and when you get to the playoffs.
How surprised were you when Leslie Alexander put the Rockets up for sale, based on all the moves they made this offseason? Because, you know, I think a lot of people's initial reaction was, oh, great, sign all these contracts and then run. But I don't know, if I'm looking at buying that team, I'm not certain that I don't find that more attractive with Chris Paul, to be honest. I mean, at least you don't have Carmelo Anthony, but with Chris Paul there, I'm not certain that would scare me away. If I'm going to spend money in an NBA team, Sean, I want it to be a good NBA team. I don't know about you, but I want it to be a good NBA team.
Yeah, and it's a team that has attracted free agents over the last couple of years, and they've shown their ability to do that. So, you know, as long as that's the case, then that's going to be an attractive market for players to go to, and that's going to make it all the more valuable as a market. So that's something that I think that I think potential buyers are going to look at. Don't forget too that Yao Ming only played there for about 5 years, but they still have strong ties with China. That's a very, very valuable marketing aspect that they have, and that's something that should really benefit them too as they look to make a sale.
What do you think happens to Carmelo Anthony? Where do you see that going?
Yeah, I think he does wind up in Houston. I think that's, you know, they've got other now that they have a new front office in New York, they're trying to restructure that whole thing. But I don't think that that's I don't think that there's any chance that he stays in New York, even though they're going to try to play it as if that's what's going to happen, and try to try to up his value by saying, hey, we might keep him. I think everybody can read through that bluff. He wants to be in Houston, and I think that's where he winds up, because in the end, the Knicks don't hold very many cards here.
In conversation with Sean Devaney of the Sporting News. So I guess the Los Angeles Lakers are probably happy with what they've seen on Alonzo Ball, or what they saw out of him in the summer league so far, correct?
I would say so. Yeah. I mean, you know, you always have the caveat that it's just summer league, and that plenty of guys have had good summer leagues and then not had much in terms of their rookie year. But you know, this is a guy certainly that anything that you would have wanted to see from him in summer league, you've seen. You know, and you had all the stuff with his dad, and all that stuff didn't go away during the summer league. I was there in Las Vegas, and he was all over the place. But still, you know, you still had the kid go out and perform, and that's what you want to see more than anything, if he's going to, if you're going to have the dad there, and you're going to have the dad making all this noise and being rather obnoxious, then you also want to see the kid shake all that off and go out and perform. And like I say, I think he did that, and he did it well.
Part of me kind of appreciates and enjoys watching the Ball family tug on the chains of shoe companies, I have to admit. You know, that doesn't make him a sympathetic, make the dad a sympathetic character, but I would be lying if I said that I didn't break out into a smile a couple of times and I was reading stories on that.
No, right. And you know, there is such a monopoly on that, and the shoe companies do have so much power that for somebody to go in and say, no, we're going to try to take this into our own hands. I do think that's a little bit refreshing. Obviously, you know, it can go a little too far with him sometimes, but you know, I was talking to Nigel Hayes, a kid out of Wisconsin who's 4 years, with the Badgers and with the Knicks now. And, you know, I asked him about LeVar Ball, and he said, you know, look, what's wrong with a dad who has that much confidence in his kid? What's wrong with a dad who's willing to do that much for his children, to make them as successful and as financially successful as possible? And you know, that to me is a pretty good point. Again, you know, sometimes it goes a little too far, but I can appreciate what they're doing there, and like you say, how they're sort of sticking it to the shoe companies.
Caught a couple of Lakers summer league games on TV, and in addition to Lonzo Ball, who was obviously really impressive, Kyle Kuzma had a pretty good summer league as well. What do the Lakers think they have in him? Now, I know they got him. He was, I think, was it the 27th pick? Mm-hmm. What do they think they have in him? Because he looked awfully good. He had a nice shot. You know, he seemed very comfortable as a stretch four. What do they think they have in him?
Yeah, certainly they think that he's going to be, and he comes in, even a little older than some of the guys who are already on their roster. Mm-hmm. So he might have a little more polish than some of those guys. But yeah, he comes in as a stretch four and really as the ideal stretch four. And I think that's how they see him. They were very happy that he was still on the board when they drafted. They were expecting him, talking to some folks with the Lakers, they didn't expect him to still be there. They thought he might go higher up in the 20s. So they were very surprised that he was still there, and obviously pretty happy to be able to draft him at that spot.